This week on The Gist, football, you bet. Where's the deef? And after NFL Week 1, where's the defense, Bill?
Got it. No.
NFL Week 1.
Hit me.
And in the CFL, Swaggerville becomes Staggerville, and the Argos take on more water. NHL prospects, like watching pre-season hockey. The Detour way. Bill thinks he can fix the TTC, and McGinty leads in the polls. How'd that happen? Premier Dad come home one night with a PlayStation under his arm for the whole province. This is the gist of it.
Politics, sports, entertainment, pop culture. It's all fair game here. Somewhere in the city of Toronto, two brains are about to collide. What will remain is the gist of it. Here now are Bill Hayes and Don Landry.
Well, Don, I'm not a big fan of newspapers having as their front page Brad or George or a combination of the two, and what other people we might see in town for the Toronto International Film Festival. I believe that there are things like news that could be on front pages. Call me old-fashioned. And on top of that, I also believe that...
I will call you old-fashioned. I've called you old-fashioned.
And you know what? I call myself old-fashioned.
Right. It's a waste of my time, isn't it? I'm trying to get under your skin, but no, that's not an insult.
But here's the thing. Doesn't it make us look like hicks?
In what way?
Well,
that we have George Clooney on the front page or Madonna?
George,
or,
and I'll tell you where he's going to be. If you go down to the whatever.
I don't think it makes us look like hicks at all, because I think it happens everywhere, including Hollywood. I think it happens everywhere, including Hollywood. And that's a place where you would expect them to be blasé about this kind of thing. Yet there are photographers everywhere. People are excited to see celebrities. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're tourists. Maybe the people who live there are all going, "You're not as good as I am. Why are you a star?" I guess that's possible.
There's some element of that. But
the thing that makes us look kind of hickish, I think, is the questioning of, how do you like Toronto? You like Toronto? Is Toronto good? The weather's pretty good today, right? It's not freezing and everything like this. That part of it kind of is...
I'll tell you, on a related note, a friend of mine was at a TIFF party and ran into J.P. Arancibia,
right,
who is the, as you know, the Blue Jays catcher, rookie.
What's he doing at a TIFF party?
Don't know, but he's getting around town. And
see, I thought J.P. Arancibia was actually somebody who was in Entourage.
Be a great name for
at first.
Yeah.
And then I remember he's the catcher.
But the thing was, this guy asked him, "Well, how do you like playing for the Blue Jays?" "Love it. I love the city." He's apparently from Miami. He loves Toronto.
All right.
And this friend of mine who was asking him was kind of like incredulous. Like, really? You really like it? And I think that is something that is so true of everybody in this city. I know when I've traveled outside of Toronto, how people are... They love us. They love this city. They come here and they go, "Wow, it's great." But we can't get enough of, "Boy, we're just not good enough."
I don't understand that part of it. You say your friend reacts with, "Really? You like..."
He did.
I don't understand that.
Well, because he's thinking the guy's from Miami and he likes it here better. He'd be like, "What?" Seriously. Yeah. It was like... And
I know.
Like, "Whoa,
that's just a... It's just a line of thought that makes us look worse than, "Hey, do you like it here? I'm glad you're in Toronto. Toronto's nice." We're like that little dog hopping along beside the bulldog in the old cartoon. That's worse, though, to go, "Really? No, I don't think we're really very good."
I absolutely believe that. I think that's the way most people are here. I really believe that. I think it's true everywhere. The grass is always greener someplace else, and we can't believe that our grass is as green as it is, as it were.
It's a fine city. I enjoy living here, but it does kind of bother me when we get people continuously asking celebrities or people from out of it. They're going to do that to George W. Bush, who's coming into town next week, by the way.
Perfect. I'll be there.
Without his usual 100, 110,000 person entourage. Usually when he goes to a foreign country, there's a vanguard that goes in first. Yeah. I do believe with George W. We're just getting a pocket full of people when he... Hide your WMDs, by the way.
Hide,
if you have any in your basement, they're
sure
going to find them, okay? Because George W. Bush is coming to town. But
look, you could hide them at Young and Eglinton, and they wouldn't find them.
Before we get off the TIFF thing here, I don't know if this is true. You want to believe it's true, and then you want to be outraged by it. But there was a story going around that Madonna, very difficult to handle from time to time, she was walking down a hall, or about to walk down a hall, and 8 staffers, an insider, said... This actually happened, that all the staffers were told to turn around and face the wall and don't watch her walk down the hall, which I think saved 8 people from being turned to stone. I wouldn't be upset by it. I go, thank you very much. I don't have to look at Medusa. No, Madonna. It's, you know.
Hey, you were right in both cases.
It's no coincidence that they sound almost the same.
Here's the thing to me. It would be enough for me to be able to turn around and just sniff Madonna.
Yeah. What?
Just.
I realized I said yeah there without really thinking about it.
I'm saying that what? I don't have to see her. All I have to do as she walks by is go, Madonna. That's all.
That's unbelievable.
That's enough for me. That's
Why
enough.
Would you say something like that?
Because the whole idea is stupid. Why can't I be stupid too?
No, I'm with you. I happened to be in the belly of the beast last week on Thursday night when everything was getting rolling. Mm-hmm. U2, their documentary. Bono was around, I guess. Everybody was supposed to be around. I didn't see any. I happened to go to the hotel. What is it? The Hyatt, I guess, which is down right near Roy Thompson Hall and some of the other things that are going on. I was doing something else there, and it was a beehive.
Insane.
It was fun. It was electric. Didn't see any celebrities. Well, I saw John Gomeshi from CBC Radio, which I
didn't see any celebrities.
Well, no, I like the guy, but I was hoping to see. Maybe this makes me, you know. Silly, you talked about this off the top, but sure, I'd love to see a celebrity. It'd be kind of cool to walk by and there's Clooney.
Did you ask
Shoot
John?
Shoot him the double guns. Hey, Georgie, how you doing?
Did you ask John if he likes Toronto? He really likes Toronto?
Bombs away, boys. Bombs away.
Well, when it comes to our bombs away, I got a real quick one today, Don. Now, I like watching tennis, at least the big events, Wimbledon, U.S. Open. I don't care a lot about how they behave. I mean, Serena Williams had a temper tantrum. Really? That's a shocker. Yeah. She's a bit of a diva, I understand. We talked about the grunting, and that bugs me a little bit, as I said last week. But what really gets me is, when the last point is made, every freaking winner drops to his or her knees and looks to the heavens. Please, stop. Can't someone do something original? Maybe throw your racket into the crowd, or just go to the net and shake hands. What a radical idea that would be. And while we're talking about celebrations, don't get me started on football players who go crazy when they make a catch for a first down. Here's a bulletin. That's your job.
All right, a couple of points. One, throw your racket into the crowd. Really, really, Bill, that's your idea of a celebration.
It's
Someone's
different.
Going to get hurt. That's a problem.
Oh, I see. The insurance guys have to come into it.
It's not. Really, you want to, would you like them to helicopter it to the upper deck? Or just, how about walking over and handing it to somebody? I'm with you on
Whatever.
That.
Whatever, okay.
Throw your
it's
racket
just
into
different.
The crowd.
That's all I'm saying.
Football players, have been driving me crazy for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And it's not even a first down. Sometimes a guy just making a tackle who has to run out away from everybody else so the camera can be only on him. I know this is why they do it. Give me my area to do my little dance, to pound my chest and wiggle my hips, to do my thing. Can you imagine if hockey players did the same thing? Like for, I would say, the parallel kind of rate of success or for the parallel kind of playmaking. So
You see it with hockey fighters.
Well, but I'm just saying, when a guy stops a guy who's run for 3 yards and he tackles him. You know, he just makes a run-of-the-mill, ordinary tackle stopping him for three. You imagine in hockey, you win a face-off, and then you just get in the guy's face, start dancing around. Woo! Yeah, baby! Yeah, or a goalie doing that, making a glove save, just coming out and start doing all these disco moves and things like that. They do it for the most pedestrian of reasons in football, and it's driving me to distraction. You know, plus, save your energy. You don't ever know what little extra ounce of energy is going to allow you to make that play late in the fourth
quarter. Here's the other thing about that, though. You have a helmet on. No one can see who you are anyway. You know what I mean?
Look, number 62. Well, what does he look like? I don't know. His face is the same as everybody else's.
Yeah, I know. Serena Williams, you touched on Serena Williams. And it disgusts me, that kind of demeanor,
happened.
That kind
it's
of
ever been thus in tennis. I mean, look at McEnroe.
I know.
Look at Jimmy
Connors. Disgusted
me
then too.
I guess, but it's not going to change because we treat them like kings and queens.
Serena seems to have this parallel universe where she just looks at things so completely and utterly differently that she's just being set upon. I mean, first of all, the umpire made the right call.
Yeah, but she didn't know the rule.
She didn't even know the rule in the first place. And then to not shake hands at the end of the game, I mean, come on.
Pretty petty.
Such a big suck about this whole thing. And it's not just Serena. I thought that Andy Roddick got way out of hand. I understand that he had... Do you know what I'm talking about? I understand he had some safety concerns after some rain and the court was bubbling. And it wasn't enough for him to come out and say, no, it's still bubbling and I have a problem. He had to berate the guy who was trying to make the decision and and make him seem as though he were some kind of substandard, sub-intellectual humanoid.
But, you know, again, that's nothing new in tennis. It's always been that way. And I mean, I'm not going to defend it. I do.
Good, you can't. I mean, you shouldn't.
No, but I ignore it. That's how I tend to view it. It's funny to me, though, that we see that in tennis, which is an individual sport, rarely see it in golf. Matter of fact, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in golf. And that too, is a very individual sport.
That'd be great, too, eh? Sinking a 3-foot putt. You start dancing around the green.
Waving your putter in the other guy's face. Yeah, that'd go over well. That didn't sound right.
All right, you know, I think it's a Canadian thing. I get frustrated sometimes when people say, what is a Canadian? We don't know what Canadian is. I think we do know what a Canadian is, and it comes out in sporting events. We know what we are and who we are. We like hard workers who meet and greet success with stoicism. That's what I like. That's what most Canadians like. We also like hard workers who meet and greet their failures with stoicism. And so that's why I get my nose bent out of shape so often when I see this kind of crap going on in sports. I like hard workers who just act as though they expect to maybe possibly do it again.
And have done it before.
And don't think that there's anything special about them or what they just did necessarily. Just that they did a job and they did it well, and thank you very much for noticing. I appreciate the compliment, but aw shucks, let's move on.
This is The Gist of It with Landry and Hayes.
Don, the first week of the NFL season is in the books. And if nothing else, it was surprising. There was a lot of stuff that I don't think could have been foreseen. The huge night that Tom Brady had on Monday night, record-breaking night.
You couldn't have foreseen that against the Miami Dolphins?
I couldn't have seen him. Well, I could see him winning. And I mean, I don't think there was any doubt that they were going to beat the Dolphins. But to do it the way they did it, kind of not a surprise. I mean, Brady's Brady. But was it 511 yards? That's a lot of offense from one guy.
Henny had a pretty good night, too, actually, because between the two of them, they set an NFL record. Total passing yards, 902, 906, somewhere in there, it was over 900 yards. And that's what I find kind of amusing is in the aftermath. Well, look, Tom Brady is the glamour child, and they won. But all the highlight packages I saw pretty much ignored Henny's part, except at the end. By the way, he also had over 400 yards, and they set a record.
Oh, really? Well, and he's been treated he's like a redheaded stepchild. I mean, I'm a big Michigan fan, and he was a quarterback there and wasn't overly appreciated. Started for 4 years. He seems to be doing okay.
Yeah, he might be able to dig the Dolphins out. And if Reggie Bush stays healthy and can lug the ball the way we know he can.
It could happen, though. I'll give you that. But the thing that's interesting about the whole week was that I was thinking going into this week that what we'd see would be a lot of defensive battles. You didn't have a summertime or an off season where players were able to get in touch with their playbooks and understand what offenses were about. You had a lot of teams that were changing, not just personnel in important positions like quarterback and so on, but also coaching staffs and coaching philosophies. And I was of the belief that the defenses would be okay. It would be the offenses that would need a little bit of time to catch up. But if this weekend was any indication, I am way wrong on that.
Well, I think what we have here is a case of really good quarterback play and really good receivers play, from what I saw, and some pretty decent defensive coverage on a lot of highlight catches. Mm-hmm. And we've been seeing that over the last few years. So that's, I think, the NFL picking up where it left off. The receivers have never been better in the history of pro football.
I've
been saying that
true.
For a few years.
Yeah.
And they also have the equipment that can make them better. If you've never seen, more importantly, felt receiver's gloves, go to the local sport check or what have you and ask for the football equipment and start and touch those things. I could climb walls with those receiver's gloves. So I'm here to tell you that I think as great as the NFL's and the CFL's receivers are, and they're all making great catches too, it's at least...
Unless they're Argos. Sorry.
No, that's a quality shot. All things being equal, I don't think that they're necessarily better than the receivers of a bygone era. Jerry, you put those gloves on Jerry Rice from the beginning of his career, or Terry Greer, if you want to talk about CFL receivers, and the numbers would be astronomical, more astronomical, actually. So it's great. They're awesome athletes. They do amazing things to make sure they can stay in bounds. When it comes to catching the football, it's tough to drop those things.
Hold it, though, Don. It's not just the gloves. It's also a lot of the rules have been changed to make it more difficult for the defense and to make the offense better. They can't hit the way they used to. There's an awful lot of different things that have been put into the game in the last several years. Too many to talk about. But it's all designed to add offense. That was always the case. But the thing is, when you're looking at the type of production we saw this week, especially from quarterbacks and their receivers, you need a lot of time to develop that kind of timing. You have to have every opportunity for quarterbacks and receivers to be on the same page. You know how difficult it is in the NFL and the CFL. It's read and react, and you have to both be interpreting the same thing, both the receiver and the quarterback. That takes a lot of time. These teams have been able to do it in a lot less time than I thought was possible.
But yes and no. I mean, some of these routes, it's easy. Is it man coverage on the corner? Is he step for step? Well, then I'm throwing to the inside shoulder. You know, everyone knows. And I saw a lot of those kinds of plays. Makes me wonder sometimes what defenses are going to do to adjust to that, because that play seems to be deadly right now in both leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Streak pattern down the sideline with an underthrown football. I mean, how do you defend against that if it's done properly? But over the weekend, there were some really fantastic individual efforts, weren't there? I mean, we talked about Tom Brady and Chad Henne, and Sebastian Janikowski, are you impressed? 63-yard field goal. It's in Denver. Okay, we can
still
asterisk it.
He's always had a strong leg, unfortunately.
He nailed it from 70 in practice, although the tape of the one I saw would probably have been blocked. It came up pretty low, but it's still pretty cool.
That's a long way.
70 yards, even in Denver.
Yeah, it's interesting that they wouldn't, and I may be wrong on this, but I can't recall Denver ever having a kicker who had the kind of leg that could take advantage of something like that.
Right.
Because, you know, where they are, the air is a whole lot thinner. And if you had a kick, imagine if they had Janikowski.
Right.
A 60-yard field goal would be commonplace.
Right.
And that's a big weapon.
Let me ask you this. Can we wait at least 2 weeks to anoint Cam Newton as the next best, greatest wunderkind? Okay, great.
Absolutely.
Nice game. Well done.
Great game. Not nice game. Great game. And surprisingly so. I mean, going into this, look, they were the worst team in the NFL last year, and on merit.
You know, they were worthy of that.
Oh, without question. Yeah. Again, they're a team that had a new coaching staff. They got a quarterback who, while he was a great playmaker in college, it's a lot different in the NFL. And he did some things that, you know, for instance, when he scored the touchdown, jumping over the pile. Oh, Cam, don't be doing that a lot.
Yeah,
that's not smart.
No.
But the fact is, it was surprising. I agree with you that I don't think we're going to see this out of him every week, but I never expected to see that out of him within the first 3 or 4 years.
I don't think we're going to see the same thing out of the Buffalo Bills every week, too. It's a bit of a stunner, isn't it? Kansas City was 7-1 at home last year. I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure how I grade them out, you know, heading into this season. But the Bills and Fitzpatrick just, you know, had a field day. In Chris Schultz told me once or twice, toughest play in the NFL to play is Kansas City. He really believed that because of
the crowd.
I guess, the way it's built and the crowd being on top of you and it sounding like a million people.
Actually, I watched a fair bit of that game, and one of the things that they mentioned, and I believe Chan Gailey mentioned it in his post-game press conference, was it didn't take too long before that crowd got on the Chiefs. And once that happened, the Bills were away to the races.
Yeah.
Because what you would think would be a real concern there became a concern for the home team. I'll tell you, that's a team that bears watching. They should have at least been within 2 touchdowns of the Bills. The Bills aren't that good. No. 41-7, your home opener is a problem. And I got to tell you, that coaching staff, that happens again. You're looking at a new coaching staff, because that you cannot have that in the NFL.
I mean, there's a lot of great stuff that happened in week one, but based on week one, if I could watch Green Bay play New Orleans every week,
I'm in.
I'm there.
All right, Don, we talked about the NFL. Let's get into the CFL. And I gave you a bit of a dig about the Argos, but really, I mean, that's almost too easy. I do have a question for you, though. And in light of what's happened in the last 2 weeks, I think it's somewhat pertinent. What happened to Swaggerville?
It's a great question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder if swagger is a contagion, because after 2 weeks of being in close proximity to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, it appears the Saskatchewan Rough Riders have a fair amount of swagger, and they put the boots to them twice. I'm more impressed almost with the second victory. The first one, you could say, all right, a 7-1 team cruising along, and they were bound to have a bit of a letdown. No surprises when you go for the rematch, and Winnipeg, in fact, jumps out to a lead, and I think, okay, I guess we're getting a little equilibrium here. So that's a very impressive victory for Saskatchewan to come back and not only win that game, but dominate the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. The Rough Riders are back. The BC Lions are back. Unfortunately, the Argos aren't back.
They're back at the back of the bus.
They are clearly the eighth team in an eight-team league. Look, at the beginning of the season, I picked the BC Lions to be in the Grey Cup game. I think against the Montreal Alouettes was my prediction. And even as they were getting out to a horrid, horrid start, knowing that the possibility existed to creep into a playoff spot in the Canadian Football League, even with a slow start, I thought maybe they can put it. They showed enough. I'm here to say that they're showing more than enough right now, the BC Lions, albeit against the Argos back-to-back.
The Argos didn't even show up in those two games.
I do believe that the BC Lions may still make it to the Grey Cup game. It's not going to be easy. And look out for Saskatchewan, too. The Western Conference has become a great, great dogfight.
It always has been.
I mean, turn your attention to the Argos if you want. And the question has to be now, is there room for optimism as the rest of this season goes on with a slight chance that you can complete and turn it around and get into the playoffs? But more importantly, is Stephen Giles going to be the quarterback who leads you into 2012 with the 100th Grey Cup in your stadium and gives you the possibility to raise some excitement amongst the local fans that the team might actually be in the game? Is he going to be the guy?
Here's the question for that. I mean, look, I know it's a year away, but there's a lot that needs to be done here. And to be fair, it's not just on their quarterbacking. I mean, I think we've talked about this before. Cleo Lemon, to me, was a disaster from day one. I don't know why he was even brought back. I don't understand it. But having said that, I'm not so sure that Stephen Giles will be the answer either. And there are a lot of other problems on this team, not the least of which is a defense that was quite strong a year ago, but has lost it. Their special teams aren't nearly as good as they have been in the past. I think there's an awful lot of stuff that needs to be fixed, not just a quarterback. And I'm not so sure that Stephen Giles will be the answer to that. But the other problem that the Argos have here is I look around at the other three teams in the East, and I see three pretty strong franchises. Winnipeg, the last two games aside, have been outstanding so far this season. The Alouettes are still the Owls. Now, coming next year, maybe they'll need a new quarterback because Anthony Calvillo will be, 110? I don't know how old he's going to be, but he's the ageless wonder. He's still doing it. And maybe I'm offside to even think that, you know, Father Time will start looking at his way in his direction sometime soon. And then there's the Tiger Cats, who, while they're still questionable, they're still a damn sight better than the Argos.
They're an inconsistent team, the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
They have moments, though.
Oh, no, it's a team that has great talent, and when it plays capably, it can do things like beat Montreal twice. Mm-hmm. And then Montreal, of course, romped over them in the return match last weekend, too. So, but they have been inconsistent for a couple of years. It's why, fully being expected to beat the Argos in the Eastern Semi last year, they did not. They fell to them. So they're still looking for that gear. But if your point is that the Argos are a far sight behind everybody else in the East, tough to argue with that right now. Very tough.
The question then becomes, if there's one guy in the last couple of years who has taken over the job that, well, was Pinball's for so long, and that is the face of the team, once again, it's not a player. It's the coach, general manager, Jim Barker. Now, I like Jim. I think he's a great guy, and I think he's a guy, really good football mind, but it's obvious he's made some mistakes here. Does he need help?
That's a great question. I honestly haven't really thought about that right now because I do think the world of Jim Barker. I think more of him as a general manager than a coach, but I'm not inside the room and I don't know that that's fair. But if I had if you forced me to choose one job for Jim Barker over the other, I'd probably be general manager. And I don't know if that's in his future. I don't know if he'll decide to do that. He doesn't seem to be the kind of guy who would, especially after a season like this, want to step upstairs and let somebody else take it over. I think he's got too much pride for that. I think after what he did last year in becoming coach of the year, he certainly wouldn't want to leave it on that note.
Here's the thing, though. That may not be his decision, because if it's deemed that something else is needed here and he does get that choice, you believe he'll take the general manager's position as opposed to the coach, or the other way around?
I think he would probably take the general manager's position. If it were put in front of him that way, you can do one or the other. I think he would choose to be the general manager. I really do.
I think that might end up happening.
It's Bill Hayes and Don Landry, and you're getting the gist of it.
Are you watching prospect hockey on television, as much of it as you can possibly get, Bill?
I lower my head in shame.
You're not.
I am.
You can. Oh, you are.
I'm not watching it a lot. I have taped both games, and I've looked at bits and pieces of it. But
I have a question for you. It's okay. A short question. Mm-hmm. Why?
Because I'm in dire need of a life. You know what my theory is? I think that had this. We're talking about the prospects tournament, which is going on in Oshawa.
It's going on everywhere. I believe I saw on the internet that Nashville's prospects had trounced Tampa's prospects.
Tampa's in that game. I was surprised.
I got blown up on Proline because of that game.
But my theory is that we get interested because we haven't seen hockey yet. And I think if you'd done this after the regular camp starts, people wouldn't watch. I think This is just a way to, I mean, I don't want to say it's a cash grab. I'm sure they're not making a lot of money if they're making any on it, but people want their hockey fix, and this is the first way to get into it. It's kind of like putting your toe in the water before you go in.
There's
completely.
Just so much else going on, and I'm not interested in preseason hockey, preseason football, I'm not interested in preseason anything, really.
Yeah, I agree.
Other than watching it for a second or two. And this is tier two preseason hockey.
Yeah, no, it is.
No, I'm not watching it. I don't care to. And if I flip around, I might watch a couple of seconds of it. But I love hockey. But I guess I'm not as big a hockey nut as, say, you are or some people are. I guess maybe I should applaud them and say, that is some kind of dedication. But like the prospect game, you know, the Leafs, who are they playing? Are they playing Pittsburgh again?
They played Pittsburgh. They played, yeah. Who was the first? I can't remember who the first one was. And then they played, they play Ottawa tonight.
Right. Well, if you like this so much, you know, I have an idea for you. Go see some junior hockey. Go see a regular season junior hockey game. You could argue, well, but not all those guys are going to be drafted. I get it. So, I mean, do you think the prospect camp is that much better than a regular season game between Mississauga and Barrie?
Well, here's the argument I would make. Here's the thing. It's an ownership issue, and that means if you're a fan of the Leafs, and we'll use the Leafs as an example because, well, we're here in Toronto, they draft somebody. Let's use Brad Ross as an example. You've never seen Brad Ross play. He plays in Portland.
Right.
This is a chance for you to see him. Now, more than likely, you're going to see him play two or three shifts. It's not that big a deal. But if you're that much enamored with the team and you want to see this guy as part of their future, you want to be able to say, I saw him. I could see. One of the other things, like Jake Gardner,
at the time it's happening, maybe it's nice to be able to say to your buddies, yeah, I saw Brad Ross play. I like his stick handling ability. I tell you, the kid's got some jets. And then down the road, if you make it, you go, see,
exactly.
I told you.
And I think that's a part of it. But for the most part, I agree with you. It really is ludicrous. The other thing is, do you really care who wins? Hey, we won the rookie tournament.
But you might as well. You might as well if you're watching it. Don't you need a rooting interest?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, I have to have a rooting interest if I'm watching a chess match.
Yeah.
So yeah, of course. But the thing is that in the long run doesn't mean anything in these tournaments. It's more about seeing those kids and trying to figure out where they'll be down the road.
Yeah, it's also junior guys with Toronto Maple Leafs on their jersey.
Bingo.
And Toronto has often been described as not a hockey town, but as a Toronto Maple Leaf town. And I think that there probably is some credibility to that point of view. I wonder if a junior Leafs would be any different. I'm not so sure it would. I guess you'd play them at the ACC. the measuring stick would be, what's a good junior hockey crowd? 6,000 or so. Would you get 6,000 per game to see the Toronto Junior Maple Leafs? I wonder.
That's a great question, and one that I don't have an answer for, but I'll tell you, if I were a betting man, I'd say no.
I keep hearing Dalton McGuinty referred to as Premier Dad, and it doesn't seem to be coming from a faction that I would term sympathetic to his political slant. So I'm going to assume that it's an insult, or supposed to be. They call him Premier Dad, and I'm thinking, I don't know if that's a terrible thing to be known as Premier Dad. So if you're an enemy of Dalton McGuinty, calling him Premier Dad may not be as effective as some other names might be. Don't we all want or hope for, as a child, and hope we've had a loving, caring dad who took care of the family? Is being Premier Dad better than being Premier Mom's new boyfriend, Steve, who I think is a real a-hole, and when can I go live at Dad's house, Mom? Isn't it better than that?
Well, I think it's meant as a dig at the fact that he's somewhat paternalistic in his approach.
All right.
That, he does worry about, a bunch of things that I guess Hudak and everybody else thinks are, you know, things that he shouldn't have that much of a concern about. What kind of snacks children have, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Like, you know, you're a premier. That should be below you. I don't have a problem with it. I don't think it's an insult myself.
I don't think so either. I mean, all of these kinds of things are, it's oversight, but not all oversight is bad. And here's sadly what I truly believe, that most people in my experience in the course of my lifetime are idiots. And need to be looked after and need to be told that they can't do certain things. I shouldn't say most, but a fair number, a large chunk of people, unfortunately, in our society, yeah, do need a premier dad.
I'm just going to say, I is what I is.
You would not be one of those people. And that's why I think I mischaracterize when I say most people.
No,
I think an awful lot of people in our society, and you know, in whatever city you want to point to in North America, there are a lot of people who just are idiots and would do the wrong thing and would feed their kids caramel apples every morning before sending them to school.
Absolutely.
And we do need some legislation to protect kids and the rest of us from the idiots of society.
Well, here, the reason I brought that up, I was being somewhat flippant and also wasn't looking deeply into what you were saying. I is what I is not at all what I was feeling. I was trying to make a point. And the point is, really, when it comes to most issues, the electorate doesn't look into a whole lot. They just kind of hear the headlines and they react to those. And a great example was with Tim Hudak, the leader of the PCs, was on about the $10,000 tax credit to companies who hire people from abroad who are educated.
New Canadians. Yeah, people from abroad who are now new Canadian citizens, right?
People who were educated abroad and had good jobs, careers, and can't, for whatever reason, find same sort of employment here in Ontario. And they're needed here. It's not a very large group. But what Hudak did was turn this into an issue of us against them. And by referring to foreigners, he really hit a nerve with me, because what that is all about is pandering. What he was looking at was a way to get at people who don't look at issues. If you actually look at this issue, this makes a lot of sense. I've been in cabs with people who were professionals. They wherever they had come from, they had done something. You go, wow, that's really interesting. And they're smart. And they talk about, now listen, I'm not suggesting that all cab drivers are like that. I am saying that an awful lot of people come from abroad. They come over here to the land of opportunity. And the opportunity is to say, geez, what is the best way to get to Yonge and Bloor from here?
Yeah.
It's not right. And all this legislation was about was to get those people the head start that they need to become full and active participants in our society. I see nothing wrong with that. And it's not like that $10,000 is going to take away a job of, say, a GM worker. Not the same thing.
You're right. It is an oversimplification to say it is thus. But,
and it's playing on base fears. That's the other thing.
Yeah, sure. But if you want to talk about pandering, I believe if you want to stay in the cynical world of politics, it's easy to argue that what McGuinty and the Liberals are doing is their own amount of pandering, that this $10,000 isn't going to do anybody any good. that it's a waste of money, and then all it does is court the new Canadian and the immigrant vote, and that's just as much a pander as what you've been
doing. Well, the thing is, though, that this has been an issue for like 25, 27 years. It's been a problem for a long time. And while I'll admit, of course, there's some political gravy to be made, the point is that isn't supposed to be about foreigners. That's my issue. Right. I have a real problem with him pandering to people because it's foreigners. I hate that us against them thing. Look, you may not like it. I know a lot of people don't like the fact that we have this mosaic in our city and in our province and in our country, to tell you the truth. Yeah. And I get that. But don't play to it. Don't try and make me feel like I want to be behind you because, yeah, you don't want these guys here either.
It looks like the Conservatives have a problem that maybe they didn't think they had heading into this campaign. If you went back to, say, last spring, all of the polls showed that Hudak and the Conservatives were in a fairly comfortable lead, not an insurmountable one, but now the latest polls are showing the Liberals are neck and neck with them. Some of them show that the Liberals are, in fact, ahead. Yeah. I remember having a conversation with a Liberal insider about 5 or 6 months ago and saying, you know, it's a very tough road ahead. And they said to me, we need to change the conversation. If we change the conversation, we can win this thing. And I think they've changed the conversation. It's no longer about how McGuinty has screwed you. I think they've changed the conversation to, here's Premier Dad looking ahead, hoping that you, along with him, will help to build a better Ontario, while Hudak is kind of spinning his wheels a little bit. And if they've changed the conversation successfully, then in early October, guess what? There's going to be another Liberal government.
Here's the other thing, along the same lines with that. Look, there are people who are hurting. People who are underemployed, unemployed, whatever the case may be. But when you look at Ontario and the numbers we have, we're a damn sight better than most places. And I think you got to start blaming McGuinty for the situation you may be in. Maybe you should credit him for the fact it's not as bad as it could be.
The gist of it.
There's a lot of talk about Mayor Ford and his brother Doug. I want to say Bob and Doug McKenzie, but you know. Or someone said to me.
Now that is a super tandem that I would indeed like to see running the city of Toronto.
Well, someone said to me, why is it no one's calling them dumb and dumber?
I'll bet some people are, but you know,
I
would not endorse. Even Margaret Atwood said, look, I think she said it of Doug Ford in particular, but maybe Rob as well. I think maybe both of them. Look, they're not stupid.
No, they're not.
You know, hopefully they'll. No,
but they don't come across as Mensa members. Yeah. But Ed, that's not fair. But
if you were going to have a Jeopardy game, and you, as you know, you need three contestants, I think I might have answered my own question. You've got Doug Ford on the left, Rob Ford on the right, and Margaret Atwood standing in the middle. I'd like to see them play Jeopardy. I wonder who else would make a good. Well, or Giorgio Mammoliti, if you want to go kind of the other way.
That would be high comedy. That really would. And make sure it's questions. You'd have one on football so that, you know, Rob could get some stuff right. Yeah. You'd have one on the writings of Margaret Atwood, which would be great. Who?
I'll take monorails for $500. Clean brilliant. Up on that one.
That'd be great. Yeah. Here's the thing. One of the things that's been mentioned about the budget cuts that have been suggested by the mayor is perhaps cutting back on TTC employees by as many as 800. I think 400 is the other number. There's several numbers out there. And here's the thing I have to say about that. You can't cut routes. You can't cut service. And you can't cut the jobs because you're going to need them to keep things going the way they are. How about raising fares so that it's paying for the service. I know it's a radical idea.
We've heard this over and over again, haven't we? That if you don't price it effectively, people are going to stop using it. And some people need to use it. You'll hear the argument that I don't know what the percentage of Torontonians would be, but there's a great number of people in Toronto who have a hard time making ends meet. And the only way they can get around is the TTC. And that is a crucial part of their budget. And if you raise fares, they may not be able to afford
it. I don't buy that. I'm sorry. And here's the thing. I want to buy a case of Coke Zero.
I only want to pay 2.25 for it, but it's costing Coke $3 to make it. Can I reasonably expect they're going to sell it to me for 2.25?
Yes, you can. If they get a subsidy, you can.
Yeah, well, they don't deserve a subsidy, and neither does the TTC.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I think there are certain services that go beyond merely profit margin. And I think you would agree with that. For instance, healthcare. I don't want somebody running it as though it were a bottom line operation. I don't want them running it recklessly either. And I believe public transportation is the same way. I don't want it run as a bottom line profit and loss going concern. I do believe that there's a greater good served by having a very good and accessible mass transportation system in this or any other city, and you have to pay for it, and there are different ways to pay for it.
I agree with you on all of that, but here's one of the things that I think gets forgotten in this. When you decide that the fare is going to be X number of dollars, that's based on whatever the situation was at the time that the price was set. In other words, let's just say that gas at that time was selling for 50 cents a liter. It's now $1.50 a liter. I mean, there are things that have to be built in to make it so that the service gets paid for. In the case of the TTC, while I understand that there are some people that are dependent on it and are on somewhat fixed budgets, you can probably do something for some of those people. But for others, you have to make sure they pay the freight. And it has to be done, because if you don't do it, you're going to end up in a situation like we're looking at, where service gets cut, and then the very thing you were just talking about is going to happen anyway. People aren't going to use it because it's too crowded, or there's not enough routes, or whatever. One way or the other, someone has to pay. And I say it should be the users.
I got one thing left to say to you then, Bill, I suppose, and that would be that your stop is coming up, and that would be Hard-Ass Station. Hard-Ass Station is next.
It's hard to believe we're done for another week, but there you go. You know, some say, how do they do it? More wonder, why do they do it? The fact is, we do it. We've done it again. And we'll do it again next week. And that, basically, is the gist of it. For Don Landry, I'm Bill Hayes.
And that's the gist of it for another week. The Gist of It is available every Wednesday afternoon through iTunes or at donlandry.com.